Well, good evening all. How nice to actually see you. It's brilliant. We had a little hiccup, as you know, with the Paschal candle, but there it is, beaming away now, Christ the risen, the light of the world. I imagine that most of us from time to time will have met an atheist who will proclaim the victory of science over religion as the only answer to life's questions. But for those of us who have faith, life's questions must be answered in two ways. Science can tell us how, but only religion can tell us why. So for us, there is no conflict between science and religion. In fact, many of the greatest scientists the world has ever known have in fact been believers. For example, a Catholic priest called Father Georges Lemaître. In 1927, in a paper to the Scientific Society of Brussels, he presented the idea of an expanding universe, which has expanded from an initial point, which he called the primeval atom. And over the years, that idea, has dominated modern cosmology as the most important scientific theory of the origin and development of the universe. In 1949, it became known by scientists as the Big Bang, which we've all heard about. And I was reminded of this when reading an article by Martin Bennett, who writes, "To sit and listen to the readings at the Easter Vigil, as we have just done, is to be taken from the dawn of time and to have an overview of many thousand years of history, which, with the benefit of hindsight, allows us to see how God has always been with us. From the Big Bang, which Christians think of as his first explosion of love through which he created all the universes, God has always wanted us to be like him. And that's why, as we read, he made us in his own image and likeness." It's a truly wonderful story. Unfortunately, however, we see in the Old Testament readings, again that we just listened to, that we have often failed to live up to his likeness, and yet God never fails to call us back. He clearly doesn't want to lose us. At first, you know, he sent his people messengers to appeal to their sense of loyalty to him, who at the Passover, after all, had freed them from slavery. But his prophets were rejected. People didn't like the idea of being beholden to a God whom they saw as remote, not one of them, and unaffected by the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. And that's why he decided to send his only son into the world, so that through him he could be with us in a different and more personal relationship. And this is what Jesus attempted to teach throughout his public ministry, referring often to us as his brothers and sisters, children of the one that he taught to call our Father. But as we know from Good Friday, this message was not accepted by the powers that be, and in fact led to his death for blasphemy. They raged at the very idea of the claim that he and the Father are one. He failed to move them from their entrenched position that when it came to God, they knew best. And so he suffered the same fate as the prophets. Even the apostles, apart from John, lost faith in him that day. Only after the resurrection did things change. I'm actually reading a book at the moment called Strangers in the House, and it's about soldiers and other servicemen coming home after World War II, sometimes after 5 or 6 years away, and the profound effect that their homecoming had on the wives, the children, and the families they'd left behind, as well as on themselves. For many hundreds of them, although they were safe now and free from the horrors they'd been through, it meant a new way of living from what they had known before. For some, it renewed and intensified their love for each other, but for others, it led to the parting of the ways. Today is actually the feast of Jesus' homecoming after the horrors of Good Friday, to Galilee, where they first began, where they had the most success, where they were most comfortable, and where they felt safe. His friends reacted in different ways. some with incredulity, fearing he was a ghost. Others, like Mary Magdalene, consumed with unbridled love for him, wanting to cling to him forever. However, all of them, they all knew that things were now different and changes would have to be made to their way of living with him. From now on, he promised, he would always be with them, but spiritually. He was aware that many followers wouldn't be quite ready for that. They would want to cling on to the security of the law, simply following commandments and avoiding controversy. But he also knew that many more would welcome his call to an exciting, intimate, living relationship with him. And so his master plan was to pour out his spirit on anyone and everyone who opens their heart to receive his word. And he promised that if they did, he would live in them. The risen Christ, still bearing the wounds of the Passion, is the same Jesus that they knew before, but alive again, continuing where he left off and asking each one of us to join him in helping others to bring about a real, tangible love for God, whose Son did indeed know the same slings and arrows of outrageous fortune as we do, was not remote from his people, and definitely was one of us in all things but sin.